Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Monday to you. Brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Happy President's Day. It's the only reason you care about President's Day is if you have the day off today. I care about it because it means less traffic on I-95 coming into Everbank Field. Tony, ghost town today at Everbank Field. Tomorrow will be packed down here, but I saw Bob Babich, Jaguars defensive coordinator, getting to work this morning. I haven't seen too many others. I've seen a few security folk, and that's about it. Doesn't even seem like a robust ticket taker kind of day here, or ticket seller kind of day here at
No, it really doesn't. We're talking 22 days now until free agency gets started, which means 19 days until you can start negotiating with some of these free agents about loosely at least some of the terms for a contract. So you're talking about 19 days before that extravaganza begins, and I'm sure there's still guys up there in the front office types, the head coach, that type of guy that's in there trying to work a plan.
They're working. Bob Babich says they're still breaking down last year. I mean, the coaches are not taking today off. At least I wouldn't imagine most of them are. They're hard at work. Tomorrow's State of the Franchise address. Shad Khan, Jaguar President Mark Lamping among the dignitaries tomorrow, which not really as much a football-related thing, more of a business type. Where's the franchise overall headed? What are the changes you can look forward to, the additions to the game day experience, those kind of things in the near future. And we'll carry as much of that live tomorrow, certainly, as we possibly can. Gets underway at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. So one thing we'll ask you today, the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, is going to ask you today, what are you most looking forward to hearing about tomorrow? Which is, it's an interesting question, I think, because, again, you're not going to talk about so much about free agency and the draft and where, you know, the direction of the roster is headed. You'll hear some talk, I'm sure, about the coaching changes that have taken place, Shad Khan's role in that, and maybe a little bit more about his expectations. That's one thing I'd like to hear. You know, he wouldn't put a mandate on a certain amount of wins, but will he talk about what his expectations are, and, you know, how high the bar is for Gus Bradley to jump over this year?
I'm sure the question will be asked. I'm not sure, you know, if we're going to get much of a different answer than we've had before from Shad Khan in regards to that kind of question, but certainly the question will be asked, and it'll be interesting again. I know it was eye-opening in a lot of ways last year when they actually presented the data on the impact that playing that one game in London was having for this franchise. And for a lot of fans, I think, that were upset about losing a game, you see the financial impact and you understand why the team is doing what they're doing. And I'm curious to see what the numbers look like again this year. I haven't heard anything about where they might be, but I'm sure they're around the same kind of area for this team. I know they're from 32nd to 22nd in revenue.
Projected total revenue,
right,
that is.
Which is a big, big jump, especially for a team like
that. And that, to me, look, if you can double your typical take by going to London, you earn twice as much in revenue than you would for a typical home game. That's great. But I think much more significant, at least to me, is going from 32nd when they took over in total revenue as a franchise to, as we've talked about, projected 22nd for 2015. That's a 10-spot move, and this team hasn't even scratched the surface of winning yet. So,
And last year we had the excitement of, we knew the scoreboards were coming in. We knew there were going to be some renovations, the pools, the cabanas, those kind of things were coming into the stadium. This year it's about what they're doing outside the stadium in a lot of ways with the practice facility potentially. What's the plan for the shipyard?
That's a big deal.
Right. These are the kind of things that we'll be talking to them about tomorrow, and I'm sure we're going to be getting more on that than we've gotten to this point in the last 12 months or so. My guess is there's going to be some kind of video presentation tomorrow that's going to show exactly what their plan is for those two things.
Jags have announced that U.S. Assure is their latest corporate partner. They're an insurance company. Commercial insurance programs and services are what they offer. And they're going to be the naming rights partner for the club areas at Everbank Field. So it'll be the U.S. Assure clubs at Everbank Field. So I'm sure there'll be much talk about that tomorrow as well. If you'd like to get in today, 641 1010. You can tweet the show at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. And of course, you can post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Now, I know you were working last night. Right?
I was.
How was trivia last night?
It was fun. I had a lot of fun. I had some, I like every now and then to ask a question that nobody can answer.
Give it to me. What do you got?
Every now and then. The question that stumped everyone last night was, what Western Conference All-Star gave up his starting spot in the 1992 All-Star game so that Magic Johnson could play in that game?
I remember that happening, which Western Conference All-Star in what year was it?
92.
I'm going to say Terry Porter.
It was Tim Hardaway. Mm. And I almost gave the hint that he later went on to be a two-time Eastern Conference All-Star with Miami, but I was like, everyone will get it.
That one, right.
If I give that much information. But he was a three-time All-Star with Golden State, and in 92 he stepped aside so that Magic could play.
I believe I was in the ballpark on that, at least.
You were.
I was going in the point guard direction. Yeah. You know.
I had a bunch of Stockton guesses
on
that one.
That'd be an okay guess as well. For whatever reason, Terry Porter came to mind, so that was your stumper.
Last that was night. One nobody got, yeah.
So you are going to dedicate a good portion of your life on this Monday afternoon, I would assume, to catching up on SNL's 40th anniversary spectacular.
I'm planning on checking out SNL. I still have to get caught up on The Walking Dead as well, and I'd like to see Kingsman at some point. I didn't have any time to do it this weekend, so there's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah, I found a way. I watched, and by the way, Jeff Prosser, grumpiest old man in Jacksonville. Are you kidding? I thought SNL's 40th last night. Did it have some rough patches? Absolutely. Overall,
the show does.
Oh, I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was phenomenally good last night, and I don't know what his review. He is just a grumpy, angry man.
Well, I've been doing an hour and a half show for 40 years now, and it never failed. There's going to be 20 to 30 minutes of that hour and a half where you're sitting there going, all right, let's just get to the next thing. I mean, that's just how Saturday Night Live has been forever.
That was when they rolled out Kanye West last night. Honestly, I didn't need a whole lot of the musical guests. And by the way, there's going to be no surprises for you because I've gone over every single skit with you that I could remember off the top of my head. Paul McCartney performed, which, you know, understandable. They had Miley Cyrus do Paul Simon. I don't understand how Miley Cyrus has ingrained herself in the SNL culture so much that she made it onto the stage in the opening few minutes of the program when they had Steve Martin come out and Tom Hanks and all these guys that are, you know, hosted so many times, whatever the case. She was really good. I mean, but why don't you have Paul Simon sing 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover when Paul Simon's in the house? That I didn't quite understand. So it wasn't perfect last night, but damn, I thought it was pretty funny. And when Jim Carrey asked Matt Lauer where they're keeping Brian Williams, I thought that was one of the best moments of the night. Seinfeld went after him pretty good during the actual show itself last night. I thought Jerry Seinfeld was really good last night. Robert De Niro was terrible. If you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, it's too late. I'm going to give it all away now. Cover your ears. But De Niro, it's like he couldn't read off a cue card. And really, they talked to him on the red carpet. And it was just so, it was uncomfortable even then, too. He's like, you know, they asked him, well, did you ever come in when you hosted? Because I think he hosted three times with your own skit ideas. No. I just did what the writers tell me.
That's kind of Bobby D. Like, if you've ever seen him, he's electric on a screen. I mean, electric.
Beyond boring off.
But he's a cipher, man. I mean, and there are a lot of
cipher.
There's a lot of actors out there that are that way. Like, if you've ever seen Johnny Depp, who is this crazy, kooky loon on the screen most of the time when he's playing a character up there, if you've ever seen him interviewed away from it, either he drugs himself to a point
probably
where he can't move hardly, or he's just one of these guys that that camera has to be rolling and then they come alive. But Robert De Niro is another one of those guys. Unless that camera's rolling, he's just kind of, yeah.
Do you feel Jack Nicholson has a big connection with SNL?
Not especially.
Like, they brought him out. I forget what he introduced. And the first thing he said, he goes, no comedy. No comedy for me.
No comedy.
So there was, who's the only person who got a standing ovation last night? Who's your guess?
Only person who got,
actually two. The crew ended up getting one at the end.
That was actually there?
Yes. I don't know if anyone who's alive that you wanted to see was not at it last night. Obviously,
standing ovation.
Number of the best have passed away.
I mean, Lorne?
Lorne Michaels, got brought up during the end scene when they're all up on stage, you know, and that whole thing. So it's kind of hard to tell at that point. It's just everyone's clapping. It was Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy.
Chris Rock spent about 2 minutes introing why he was so influential and so important. And I look, I get it. It was the show perfect? Could you have shown an Eddie Murphy retrospective of clips? They didn't really have a specific Eddie Murphy section, but you saw enough of Mr. Robinson and Gumby and James Brown. You realize he did Celebrity Hot Tub one time, right? I was reading some stuff last night after the show, and Eddie Murphy created so many iconic characters that he did literally one time on that show, and they became kind of cultural touchstones. But Eddie was like really choked up, I think. He got up there, didn't do any routine. He just basically got up, and they wanted to give him a moment in the spotlight, and they gave him a standing ovation, and he basically said, thank you so much for appreciating what I do. You know, I would have liked to have seen him do something as well, but I don't know. I thought I got enough out of it. It was just the cameos were as fun as anything, you know, just because, like, Christopher Walken, I think the only thing I remember him doing was introducing Kanye West, and he called him Kanye, which I thought was fantastic. That's great. Ladies and gentlemen, Kanye West. It was fantastic. I thought Timberlake and Fallon were good. I've always liked
that
pair. It's funny how many people, like, the internet is so snarky. Like, we didn't know that. But, like, I'm going to, like, Deadspin and Gawker and all these sites, you know, so they're doing kind of stories as the show's going on. So afterwards, I'm reading, you know, and they've got clips. And by the way, everyone hates Chevy Chase and why Chevy Chase is such an a-hole and all the different things, all the people he's pissed off over the years and all this stuff. But everybody on, well, I say everybody, it seemed like everyone I read, every comment I read was Jimmy Fallon is a talentless hack. I'm like, what are you talking about?
He's very talented.
He's super talented. I mean, he may not be your cup of tea.
He may be the guy who laughs in every sketch he was ever in.
Oh, and they did a thing about that, too, Todd. They did.
Oh, that was so good.
Did you see it, Tyler? Right?
Very good.
They did a digital short, right, with Sandberg and Sandler, the two of them. And it was all about the times we broke, you know, when we laughed, when we weren't supposed to. And they did a whole thing. It was Fallon and who was it?
Horatio Sands,
right? And they said, and remember that time Fallon and Horatio Sands? And remember that time Fallon and Horatio Sands? And they did five of them, five different skits. Jimmy Fallon was the worst at that kind of thing. And then they, of course, you know, showed their own instances of that stuff as well. What did Opera Man sing last night that was totally a little inappropriate? Oh, yeah. He's talked about Betty White's here, so we're all going to get laid, basically, in his Opera Man thing. And Betty White at one point made out with Bradley Cooper, which was great. I thought it was really good. But then again, if you don't like the Californian skit, it seems that's a skit that seems to drag on longer than almost any other skit they do, right? It goes for like 5 minutes, 5 full minutes. They did this Californians last night. Taylor Swift cameoed in it. Bradley Cooper cameoed in it. Betty White obviously cameoed in it. And, you know, if you don't like that skit, I could see how, you know.
That's always been an SNL thing, too. They have these sketches that'll be really funny for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then they take 10. And you're like, man, you had me.
Right.
For 2 or 3 minutes, you really had me, and then I got bored. And the Californians is one of those things you either have a taste for it, and you strap in, or you get really bored a couple minutes into it.
If you were going to, I'm going to give you a pop quiz. I'm going to quiz myself, too, because Rolling Stone a few days ago ranked all, I think it's 141 cast members, right, that have been on there. Even ones that were cast members literally for like one episode. But they were
Downey Jr.?
No, he was there for a full season. He was ranked dead last out of the whole thing. And the only reason I knew that because they said it on the show last night. They said, well, we're not going to talk about who got ranked last, although it was Robert Downey Jr. And I'm like, really? Was he the worst guy? Because I'm thinking, Tony, if you were to do a top 10 of the people who went on to have the biggest careers post-SNL, he's probably top 5, isn't he? He's been Academy Award nominated.
Right now, yeah.
Right? I mean, he's had one of the most successful post-Saturday Night Live careers and other ones as well. I mean, Billy Crystal, Will Ferrell. I mean, there's some giants out there in the entertainment industry, but he was ranked as the absolute worst cast member of all time. He did a full season back in the day. Was he on the same season with Martin Short and Billy Crystal?
He might have been when they were trying to keep that thing afloat.
Right. Martin Short's tremendous. Martin Short was out there with the who's her name who does Beyonce? She's in all the romantic comedies. Oh, you'd know her in a second.
Maya Rudolph.
Thank you very much. I thought that was really good. They did a whole thing about how musical skits mixed in with the comedy. It was really good. I enjoyed it. So Jeff Prosser, you're just an angry, grumpy old man. I'll pop quiz you later, Tony. And I haven't looked myself. And Tyler, I don't know how deep you are in SNL lore, but we'll do a three strikes and you're out kind of quiz to see how many of you can get of the top 10 according to Rolling Stone SNL cast members.
I got my list.
All right.
All right. That's what we'll do a little bit later on. All right. If you want to get in today, 6-4-1-10-10, what are you looking forward to from the Jaguars' state of the franchise address? Maybe it's the shipyards. Maybe it's more amenities in the stadium. Maybe it's more information on the Jags' long-term plans vis-a-vis London or anything else. You can share those thoughts with us today in a variety of ways, Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, 641-1010 if you want to call and talk a little football. We'll get into candidates to be franchise tagged. The window opens today. Teams have 2 weeks to decide whether or not to apply the franchise tag prior to free agency, and so we'll kind of go through the list and see who the candidates are from each team and would the Jags be interested or not in the top candidates if they were not tagged. So we'll get into that. Today, the Titans look like they're settling in, at least publicly, on Zach Mettenberger being their guy and passing up a quarterback at number two. We'll discuss that as well as we go along. So Wild West, Guns of Gold Monday, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank on Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars today on Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you live from Everbank Field. You want to weigh in on SNL's 40th anniversary last night? You're welcome to do that as well. Thumbs up or down, however you liked it. Or what was the skit, Tyler? Tyler, you watched the whole thing last night?
Yep.
What were they doing when they were talking about? Was it Seinfeld? They threw to somebody, they're talking about alcohol and making your favorite drink, and they cut to who was it doing Bill Cosby, who's on the current cast right now? Well, I can't think of his name.
Keenan Thompson.
Thank you very much.
And they cut away very fast, by the way. Right, that was
he's
so
like,
good.
Let me tell you about my favorite mixed drink.
Whoa.
I don't know if that one got, I think that one might have got some uncomfortable laughter from the crowd.
Too soon?
Yesterday. I don't know.
It's SNL, baby.
Oh, I know.
Lampoon it all.
Had somebody not gone after Brian Williams yesterday,
right,
you would have been very disappointed with that. Somebody called in, wanted to know what we thought of the Celebrity Jeopardy. I didn't know who the last guy that they subbed in there for Justin Bieber was. You remember that guy? They threw somebody in there, was supposed to be, I don't know who it was supposed to be. I didn't think that was great. I did think Daryl Hammond might have tried a little too hard with Connery last night, but they did him. They did Burt Reynolds / Turd Ferguson, which I always thought was hilarious.
It's not my name.
Jim Carrey. Got it. And then that's what he started in on, and then he forgot, and he called him Burt Reynolds the rest of the skit. Jim Carrey did
Matthew McConaughey,
right, and Alec Baldwin does the best Tony Bennett. It's unbelievable. They were ripping Baldwin pretty good last night, too, just for being a troublemaker.
He is a bit of a troublemaker.
They introduced Mr. and Mrs. Alec Baldwin. It was Tina Fey. Up there. That was pretty good. They did a little brief tribute to Tracy Morgan, because I guess he was the only there may have been some others, but he had that car accident, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's in the hospital. What have you, couldn't make it to the show last night. Anyway, I found it enjoyable, found it amusing last night, because I probably watched Saturday Night Live. I didn't watch those first few years. I probably started watching right
around.
I've
gone back and watched them because, I mean, Netflix basically has all of it up there for you to watch if you want to catch
up
on SNL.
But
so,
I mean, it's
I've gone back and watched the first couple seasons now.
But to me, it's different if you watch it like when you're young and you
sure
got that sensibility and you grow up and everyone's like, oh, this cast is not as good. I saw somebody say last night after the show, or read what somebody said, that, you know, basically when you're in that, whatever that age range is, maybe it's 25 for you or whatever it is, when you're watching it, and that's your cast, and you fall in love with them, and then you know, because you always hear, oh, the current cast stinks. You've heard that every year, though, pretty much, you know, by somebody, right? And it doesn't matter how good they are at any given time. It just goes in waves, you know?
No, it does, but it was kind of cool going back and watching. You know, I had heard all these stories about when Bill Murray and Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd were doing their thing on SNL. I didn't watch it when I was a kid because I wasn't around when they were doing their thing on SNL. But going back and watching it, you can see just how brilliant those guys were, the Belushis of the world doing their thing. And look, I grew up on, you know, that mid to late 90s cast with Dana Carvey and Mike Myers being the kind of lead guys, Phil Hartman, guys like that. And I love that cast.
Hartman was unbelievable.
But Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader, I mean, that rejuvenation of that show for me there in the mid-2000s with Will Ferrell coming in there too has been incredible. And I really enjoy the show right now. I'm not saying that I think the cast is the best they've ever had, but it's funny. Every week I laugh when I watch Saturday Night Live.
I do too. Anna Gasteyer and Will Ferrell did that, you know, that kind of like, music teacher thing. Mm-hmm. You know the one I'm talking about where
exactly
he plays the piano. So Ferrell got to do that. He got to do Celebrity Jeopardy. He might have done more live skits than anybody last night, with good reason. Will Ferrell's, amazing on Saturday Night Live. It's always been amazing. So anyway, I would have found it interesting though. Bill Murray did a lounge singer act. He sang the love song to Jaws.
Yeah.
Which was tremendous.
And then did you see Eddie Murphy staring in the mirror in the background of that?
Staring in the mirror?
Yes, in the background. Eddie Murphy, you pretty much only saw him when he came on after Chris Rock introduced him. But
right.
During that skit, in the background to Bill Murray's left, if you go back and watch it, Eddie Murphy is like creepily staring into a mirror for about a minute.
Oh, so was it like part of, like, intentional? Like,
I don't think so. No, I think he was kind of staring at it and then realized he was in the picture and was like, oh, I got to get out of here.
Really?
Yeah, go back and watch it. It's pretty good.
I will go back and watch it because at one point, I want to say it was maybe, might have been David Spade. They shot to Piscopo doing Sinatra. He was in the crowd. And he was singing My Way or whatever he did. And he, you know, I love Piscopo, Sinatra. And I think it was Spade sitting behind him. And he didn't quite know where to look. Cause like the camera's on you, but it's not really on you. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of awkward and uncomfortable. That was kind of fun though, to scan the crowd and see who you could see, in the crowd as well. But Bill Murray played at Pebble Beach this weekend.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tony, by the way. I told you I was going to blame
Anchor down,
you
baby.
If Snedeker didn't get the job
credit?
Done.
I get credit when he
does.
Credit.
I'll give all you right. credit. It's all yours. You don't get any of my winnings if I happen to win my fantasy golf league.
I don't
league
need credit because I don't want blame, and I had nothing to do with it.
I will give you credit nonetheless. You will take it, and you will like it. But if Bill Murray makes the cut at Pebble Beach, he's playing in California on Sunday. And he's not able to perform.
They just run another Murray up there.
They would have done something, right? I mean, Brian Doyle Murray. I guess they could have run out there. But all right, let's get into tomorrow, Tony. State of the franchise a little bit. I do think the shipyards is one of the most interesting aspects of this whole thing because we know they want to build a practice facility, okay? At least that seems to be where things are headed. They want to build a state-of-the-art practice bubble, right? Which, again, to me, it depends on – you know, where the money's coming from, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I think a sales tax rebate is something that's been talked about, but, and that's possible maybe with, you know, some of the club seat renovations as well. But, I think we'll hear more details about it tomorrow. But beyond that, I mean, that's one thing, first of all, that if you're a fan that worries about the stability of the franchise, the more infrastructure they put in place, and the more money Shad personally puts into it, I think it helps assuage some of those fears for people. Although, you know, the other side of the coin is, well, if they ever did leave, the franchise value would, you know, in a larger market could double overnight. And you'd more than make up for that money. That's one way to look at it. But the more, you know, for the people out there that still have those concerns, I think that's a dwindling number significantly. I think it's dwindled a great deal. But if you worry about the stability of the franchise, to me, the more infrastructure they put in place like that, the better for this team. But I'm more interested in what goes along with it. What is that area of town going to look like, and can they turn that into a destination? I don't know how far-reaching their plans are going to be. But I think that's the ultimate hope, can you revitalize that whole area and create something out of nothing that becomes a place to go, not only during football season, mm-hmm. but year round, and kind of, you know, add a revitalized element to the downtown night scene?
Well, yeah, and give people a reason to come down here on a Friday and Saturday night. A lot of people, look, my friends don't come to downtown Jacksonville. Never really have. If they want to go hit the bars, they go to the beach. You know, I mean, that's where people go if they want to hit the bars here in Jacksonville. If they get the opportunity to put something there that gives people a reason to come down here, I think on game day, it would be incredible to have something like that. I think that just year round.
Like a Jag Town. Right. Like a, or something, you know?
Right. Where just all these fans are down there having a good time. And look, we know y'all all come down, you tailgate, you do the whole thing down here, but to have a place where fans can congregate inside and have some fun on a game day, I think would be really, really cool. And it's something that some NFL cities have, some don't. But there's an opportunity here in Jacksonville to create that kind of thing. And I think Shad Khan's the kind of guy who wants to take advantage of those kind of opportunities. So I'm really curious to hear from him what his plans are, because, look, we haven't heard really anything about what's going to go on with the shipyards, except that something's going to happen in the shipyards, and tomorrow may be the first chance for anything like that to be revealed.
Yeah, I think, well, obviously I would think that it would be one of the talking points about tomorrow. At least that's, to me, that may top the list of things I want to hear about. The development beyond a prospective practice bubble, you know, and just what they can do.
And a practice bubble gives the team some flexibility. I mean, when we get into July, basically all their practices are in the morning because they don't want to mess with the afternoon thunderstorms
right
around here. It gives them some flexibility, and they practice when they want to practice, and because they won't have to worry about weather so much anymore. And my guess would be a lot of those would be in the morning, and some of them would be in the afternoon. And for fans, hopefully there's an opportunity for you to come watch them when they practice in that bubble. We'll see exactly what the
we wouldn't know what the layout would be or anything
right
like that, or when that even would
but
go.
But for fans implemented who can't make it here at 9 in the morning, maybe they can at 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Right.
And the
That's
team
a good
has
point
been very, very cognizant of trying to be more available to the fans and open it up for them. So I think they'd like the idea of being able to move some practices around just to give different people working across the city different opportunities to come see it.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on how you build the facility, right? But you see some of them that look like there wouldn't be any kind of opportunity to house fans. You know, some of them you see are basically a football field inside, I don't know, an aluminum building or whatever the building's made out of. You know what I mean? And there's not much beyond that. So if you build it with that in mind, and maybe build a couple of fields. I don't know how ambitious they would get. I don't know if, you know, what the feasibility is of building a multi-field indoor practice facility. That might be overreaching a little bit, but we'll find out more about that tomorrow. If you want to talk about what you'd like to hear about tomorrow, we're going to air that coming up tomorrow, about 24 and a half hours, by the way, at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. We'll try to air as much of it in its entirety as possible. You'll hear from Shad Khan, Mark Lamping, and company on that score. But what you're talking about, Tony, with that area around a stadium where you can go and sit indoors, bars can, you know, whatever, just create an atmosphere like a little mini city around a stadium. There's some, I guess, that don't have that, like Arizona. You look where it's located, out in Glendale.
Sure.
It's in the middle of nothing, basically, where the stadium is. And the stadium itself sits on this huge plot of land where there's nothing really abutting it. But if you go to, like, Pittsburgh, you go to, you know, any number of places, Green Bay.
New England.
Seattle. Is New England like that? New England.
They have one Patriot Place, which is like a shopping center, hotel, alongside of Foxborough Stadium, so. Very
okay,
cool.
I guess they do have their own little kind of built-in.
I know Nashville basically has that whole strip over there next to the stadium.
Yeah, I guess I've never really noticed. You've gone to games as a spectator there. I've
yeah
only gone, you know, as a member of the press, so.
Look, it gives, as much as we're talking about pregame, I think it's even a cooler thing postgame. You know, when you don't have any beer left in your cooler
sure
after a win, to be able to go to the bar with everyone else that's still celebrating for a couple hours, I think that is an absolutely unique experience to NFL cities. And here in Jacksonville, you don't really have a place to go do that right now, and the potential is there for there to be one for the fans to go congregate after a game and celebrate. Or drown your sorrows a little bit.
Whatever the case may be. Yeah. All right, coming back, we'll take a look team by team on the players who are candidates to receive the franchise tag. Nobody here in Jacksonville is going to be getting it. And it only was used four times around the entire league last year, just a few years ago. There are over 20 franchise tags handed out, so it's certainly dwindled, as much as the players hate it. And I don't know if there's any one single element of the CBA that I hear more complaints about from players than the franchise tag itself. The fact that it's used so seldomly anyway is really kind of ridiculous. Yeah. Why it's such
Well, the cap keeps going up, and it has less and less reason for a team to have to use it.
True. That, right. But and even if they do, the what they're giving you is an average of the top five highest paid players at the position. And people talk about, you know, I want the security of a multi-year deal. The security is in how many guaranteed dollars you get. Whether you get a bunch of them this year or they're spread out over several years, that's where the real security comes from. And most of the players should know that. You know, a 4 or 5 year deal is rarely guaranteed unless you're talking about some of these rookie contracts now beyond maybe the first year or two. And so we'll get into that a little bit as well coming up. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today, Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, from revolvers to sporting arms, everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America. Guaranteed, you can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Go to guns4jax.com. That's guns, the number 4, J-A-X.com. Or visit them on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor here. Ozier's not here. I'm sure he's gathering up his gold at the house because that's how he rolls. He will be heading to the Combine in a couple of days, and he and Ron O'Halloran, and among others, I'm sure, will be checking in from the Combine. We'll
I think they're leaving tomorrow afternoon / night.
Right, after the state of the franchise address, as far as that goes. Nothing really happening until, I think, Wednesday afternoon, really, but we'll have those guys check in, set the scene for us coming up on Wednesday. State of the franchise tomorrow. One piece of NFL news, if you want to call it that, I suppose it is. Josh McCown could be signing with the Buffalo Bills as soon as today. Remember, when a veteran gets cut in the midst of his contract, he automatically becomes a free agent, as opposed to when his contract expires and you know, then he has to wait for the opening of free agency, which is March 10th this year. But in the case of McCown, who had another year left on his two-year contract that he signed with the Bucks last year, it looks like the Bills are trending in that direction. Of course, they played Kyle Orton over E.J. Manuel last year. I still contend, to me, I understand what Doug Marrone felt like. This is, you know, my job is to win as many games as possible, okay? But to me, once Buffalo was eliminated, and I believe they were eliminated in Week 16 with a loss to Oakland, if I'm not mistaken, they had, you know, a chance to play for a 9-7 record, which they did. I just felt like they owed it to the franchise to play E.J. Manuel in the last game of the season.
Well, I'd love to have a candid conversation with Coach Marrone here in Jacksonville about whether he wanted E.J. Manuel and whether he wanted to trade up to go get Sammy Watkins, and how much, if he didn't like those two moves by that team and that franchise, how much that had to do with, okay, I got a 3-day window, I'm out of here. Now, I don't think he'll ever talk about that kind of thing publicly. I just don't think he's going to address those.
But I'll be happy to ask, you know, in the right setting. I mean, you know, when he did his introductory press conference, we could have asked him questions about that kind of thing. I don't think, you know, much like he didn't want to talk about his own departure and the thought process behind it. He said those conversations are private, so I certainly don't think he's going to go into. But, you know, if he ever is kind enough to join us here in the Jaguars Today studios, and I frankly don't know how much we'll see of him. You know, he's not the coordinator. You know, he's an offensive line coach, and that doesn't mean we wouldn't love to have him in here. But, yeah, I'm with you. I don't think he's going to get into the specifics of that stuff. Let's get a phone call or two in. I believe we have Joe on the line first this morning here on Jaguars. Hey, good morning, Joe. How are you?
Great, guys. How y'all doing?
Good. What's up?
On the shipyards thing, the practice field down there, I saw some sketches. It looks like it has a lot of potential. I'd be a little worried about the wind down there and the water. Obviously, Scobie'd have to kick inside the stadium with all that wind down there, but the practice. But I'm more, I live in the urban core, so a lot of us down here are more interested in the shipyards, but we're also excited about the Jaguar news. But at all, I mean, everyone down here is really excited about it, so.
All right, thank you, Joe. I mean, that's the thing. You don't have to even be a Jaguar fan per se to be excited about the potential, you know, revitalization or increased vitalization, if that's a phrase, to, mm-hmm. you know, the downtown area and the economic impact potentially for the city. If it's good for Jacksonville, it, you know, it's fine. I say it, it's not always good for everybody. You know, there's always some downsides, but I would think for the majority of people, the, you know, the more money that could impact this economy in a positive way is a good thing. So, you know, I guess we'll find out more what we're able to find out on that score. Anyway, coming up tomorrow, again, we'll cover that live, carry that live for you about 24 hours from now, 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. And there'll be full video coverage at Jaguars.com as well, getting underway at 10:45 tomorrow if you want to check that out as well. Tony, just one group's opinion on this, but Pro Football Talk put together a team-by-team list of potential franchise targets. I'll run through them. And you tell me, if these guys don't get the tag, do you think the Jags will have any interest in pursuing them in okay. free agency, at least among the best candidates for each team? Some teams really don't have a clear-cut franchise tag. That's why you're not going to see it applied that much. You had 21 franchise tags given out in 2012. 21? That's, you know, two-thirds of the league. Eight of them in 2013, so 21 to 8, down to 4. Given out last year.
Mm-hmm.
We suspect, unless deals get worked out, Justin Houston, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, Devin McCourty, all those four very strong candidates, probably a few others along the way as well. Arizona Cardinals, go alphabetically. Antonio Cromartie, pretty much the only guy that would they would think, but I doubt he gets the franchise tag cornerback number. I can't see the Jags.
Me either.
Going that direction. Antonio Cromartie's a pretty good player.
He is.
You know,
and I'm sure they'd really like to keep him there in Arizona, but you're not going to franchise that guy.
You hear what Patrick Peterson said? He said all he talks about is New York. That the feeling is that he wants to just go back. He loved playing in New York, and the Jets have a great need for cornerbacks, and that may be a reunion of sorts.
We'll
in the
see.
Let's see. The Atlanta Falcons. They said Sean Witherspoon's injury-related absence hurt the team, but it'd be ludicrous to tag a guy coming off a torn Achilles tendon. Would the Jags have any interest? Could Sean Witherspoon be a bargain on the free agent market, or is he going to be considered damaged goods coming off a torn Achilles? When we talk about a team wanting to get better at linebacker, Sean Witherspoon was seen as a rising young player not too long ago, and that's a pretty devastating injury to deal with, though.
No, and it's usually an injury that takes about a year to recover from it. That's not one of those where you come back the next year and you're completely back to your normal self. It usually takes 2 years. Now, he's young enough that you're talking about him being 28, basically, when he got back to full speed. That's an interesting one if you're talking about waiting for that first wave of free agency to come through. Would the Jags maybe have some interest in bringing in a guy like Witherspoon in that second wave? Sure, I think that's the type of guy you take a look at,
right,
especially when you're trying to upgrade that linebacker
position.
He's
not a priority on the first couple of days of
right.
free agency, certainly. Now, the Ravens are an interesting group, okay? Most feel Torrey Smith won't get the franchise tag. He does want to go back. I think the Jags should be interested in Torrey Smith if he does make it to the open market. You know, I'm not saying he'd be the top wide receiver choice, but certainly among them. Purnell McPhee, who's a versatile defensive and pass rusher. You know, I mean, we talk about, could they draft a Randy Gregory type? Well, they could. You could also maybe sign a pass rusher, Jason Pierre-Paul, something along those lines, and hope that you get Leonard Williams to fall to you because he's a different type of lineman in the draft. I could see them being interested in Purnell McPhee. And the feeling is, you know, because you got a lot of money tied up in Haloti Ngata and Terrell Suggs, that you might not want to commit that much cap to your defensive front four / front seven.
It'd be interesting because McPhee, if he comes here, is he going to come here as the Leo, or is he going to come here as the Otto? And where do they want him to fit in? Because he didn't play a lot of coverage last year with Baltimore. I did look into the numbers with that. Didn't play a whole lot of coverage last year with Baltimore. He was more a guy they brought in as kind of a defensive end in that 3-4 is more of what he did as opposed to outside linebacker, and they allowed him to rush on some pass rush situations. So where exactly does he fit with what Jacksonville wants to do? I'm not saying that they wouldn't show some interest in a guy like Pernell McPhee, but I'd be curious what their plan is for him if they do pursue that guy.
What about Jerry Hughes in Buffalo? Back-to-back double-digit sack seasons. Yeah, he's playing with a very good defensive line, which draws attention away. Obviously, you have Mario Williams, Marcel Darius, among others, Kyle Williams up there, really good players.
It's interesting to me because it feels like they're going to have the opportunity to get their Leo if they want to in the draft right now.
But what if you go, what if Leonard Williams is there for you?
I get it, and I get the idea of you add as much pass rush as you possibly can.
Or what about this? I'm just spitballing here, right? We talk about Randall Cobb being a target, right? Everyone would love to see Randall Cobb be a target, okay? What if instead they sign Jerry Hughes and they draft Cooper, right? Or whoever their wide receiver of choice is with the third pick in the draft. I get that the feeling is they want to get younger on one side of the ball, which is defense, because you got a little bit of age on the defensive line, middle linebacker, and they want to get some more veteran presence on offense. But, you know, the best laid plans don't always work out that way.
No, I get it. And you're looking at Jerry Hughes. This is 6'2", 253, so he's not the size that they're looking for really out of that Leo position. It's again, one of these guys of what is he in Jacksonville. I'm not saying that you can't use a guy that gets after the passer the way Jerry Hughes does, and I think you certainly have to take a look at him. He's not real high on my list because I don't know where he fits with what Jacksonville wants to do on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I think we can get too caught up in the measurables, too.
Sometimes,
you know what I mean? I mean, look, if the guy can rush the passer, and he's proven he can rush the passer, does it matter if he fits the exact template of what you would draw up for
no.
the perfect Leo?
No, and like I said, you add as much pass rush as you can get.
Let's go. Carolina Panthers, Greg Hardy. Little chance that people think that they'll franchise tag him. His play on the field is deserving of being among the highest paid pass rushers, and you could get him at a bargain. Do the Jags knock on the Greg Hardy door?
I don't think so.
I don't think they do either, but I wouldn't be 100% shocked if they did. And, you know, there's a pretty good case to be made that he's not going to get suspended because under North Carolina law, you're considered exonerated if on appeal, because of the way their court system is set up, if you're found not guilty or the charges are dropped, which they were, he has no legal jeopardy hanging over his head, and he's already missed 15 games. Now, he got the paychecks for those games, so there's some consideration, could they fine him instead of make him miss more games, because he's basically missed practically a season over a situation where ultimately he was found to have no legal jeopardy.
Sure.
So,
and he certainly is one of the more interesting stories going into NFL free agency because he is a really supremely talented young pass rusher in this league who's going to hit free agency because of an off-field issue.
Bears don't have anybody. Bengals don't have anybody the Jags would be interested in that high of a regard. I mean, Jermaine Gresham's name is mentioned there. I don't think they're going to be interested in Gresham.
They're not franchising that guy.
They're
either.
Not franchising him, right, but he's just a guy as far as tight ends go.
He's going. A lot like Mercedes to me.
Very much, right. I mean, you've got that already. You're not going to go, and you're going to look for a different kind of tight end if you can find one, and maybe that guy's Jordan Cameron with the Cleveland Browns. You don't know how they feel about the concussion issue. You know, that's the big thing. 3 and 2 years. That's the only knock on Jordan Cameron, right? I mean, you could talk, is he stout enough in the run game? If they're signing a tight end, Tony, it's a pass catching,
right?
The angle that they're looking at, and the guy averaged over 17 yards a catch. So I can't tell you how they're going to feel about his medical history, but if they feel like he's no more significant a threat than the typical guy out there, I think they'd absolutely be interested in
Me
Jordan
too.
Cameron.
I think the list of tight end is so short, with it being Julius Thomas, Jordan Cameron, and Clay.
Clay.
Those are really the three guys that you would even consider signing as an upgrade at the tight end position. Maybe you start looking at a guy like Niles
Paul,
right? If all three of those guys come off the board, because he is more of just a move tight end that you could bring in here to Jacksonville. And I'd have no problem if those other three guys got signed places if the Jags brought in Niles
right.
Paul.
He's going to be a lot cheaper than
yeah.
those other guys, too.
I think it's an upgrade for them as far as a pass-receiving tight end. But if they do that move, then I think you are talking about probably keeping Mercedes Lewis for another year on that card.
All right, up next, This date in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL, and plenty more. It's a Wild West. Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you all week long by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. This date, 1972. Happy birthday, Jerome Bettis. Jerome Bettis,
the bus,
recently minted Hall of Famer, getting ready to be inducted into the Hall coming up. He turns 43 years young today, Tony. And with that, in honor of Jerome Bettis, in fact, that not much else happened on this day in football history. An impromptu pop quiz, top 10 rushers in NFL history. Jerome Bettis, I will give you at number 6. Who you got?
Top 10 rushers in NFL history?
Lifetime career rushing yards.
Barry Sanders.
Barry Sanders, number 3.
Emmitt Smith.
Emmitt Smith, number 1.
Walter Payton.
Number 2.
Why am I drawing a blank?
Why are you drawing a blank? I gave you Bettis.
I know you did. You gave me Bettis.
You got 4.
And now I'm completely drawing a blank. Wow. O.J. Simpson.
O.J. Simpson is not in his 19th.
Really?
All time. 19th for O.J.
19th?
A little over 11,000 yards in his career.
That's
with
crazy.
Bills and 49ers. It is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. In fact, Fred Taylor has outrushed O.J. Simpson.
LaDainian Tomlinson.
Number 5.
Jim Brown?
Number 9.
He's not going to be in there. Dickerson.
Dickerson's number 7. This guy probably doesn't remember he's on the list.
Doesn't remember he's on the
Tony
list?
Tony Dorsett. See how timely that was and topical?
Yeah, you did that.
That's awful of me to say.
Curtis Martin?
Could be true. Curtis Martin's number 4.
How many am I missing?
2. You're missing 2. You're missing number 5 and number 10. Very recent guys.
Tomlinson?
Tomlinson's number 5.
Recent.
Number 10. Reasonably recent, yes. League MVP, Super Bowl champion.
Marshall Faulk.
Marshall Faulk, ladies and gentlemen. Number 10. All-time leading rusher with Edger and James just on the outside looking in. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, or maybe you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. Check out that Stop Snoring Somnomed Snore Guard custom fit as well. Very popular item there. Visit jamesjmccall.com. Get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, you know that whole mutual parting of the ways story that comes up a couple times a year, and we all know it's not really mutual, but you still watch both parties smile and nod and say all the right things so that neither side winds up with any egg on their face. Well, San Francisco and former head coach Jim Harbaugh's parting of the ways may not have been as mutual as the team wanted us to believe. How do we know? Because Jimmy said so. In an interview with the TK Show, a San Jose-based podcast, Harbaugh had this to say about leaving San Francisco, quote, "I was told I wouldn't be the coach anymore, and then you can call it mutual. I mean, I wasn't going to put the 49ers in the position to have a coach they didn't want anymore, but that's the truth of it. I didn't leave the 49ers. I felt like the 49er hierarchy left me." And we mentioned this a few moments ago, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers cut quarterback Josh McCown last week, meaning that the Bucs are probably locked in at a quarterback with the number 1 overall pick. It also means that Josh McCown is a free agent right now. Reportedly, the Buffalo Bills have a meeting set up with Josh McCown today. And again, he's free to sign with anybody, anytime at this point in time. An interesting dynamic up there as they're trying to figure out what to do with the quarterback position in Buffalo. Kyle Orton retires after a 9-7 season. They have E.J. Manuel going into his third year who really hadn't shown much. Do you go sign a guy like Josh McCown, or do you roll the dice on somebody in the second or third round of the NFL draft? That's kind of the position Buffalo is left in right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, for them, there's some thought maybe they go Sanchez because Rex knows him, but Rex knows him, and maybe that's why they opted to go McCown. You know? I mean,
you know
the good and the bad of the guy in that circumstance. You always hear that, oh, so-and-so knows him. It was like the Bills originally when Ryan Nassib was coming out of college, right? Well, Doug Marrone coached him. He knows him the best. Yet all these guys tripping over themselves to say he was the best quarterback prospect, maybe the best prospect in the NFL draft, and then he went in the fourth round to the New York Giants.
No, he did. And by the way, Peyton Manning has told the Broncos that he is physically and mentally ready to return for the 2015 season, and now everyone says he should take a pay cut.
Honestly, as much as they're asking Jim Carrey last night, Matt Lauer on the red carpet, you know, why didn't you make it on SNL? And Carson Daly is talking to, I think it was Carson Daly talking to Peyton Manning, and, you know, it was all SNL, SNL. It's like, hey, Peyton, are you coming back next year? I mean, is it an opportunity for you to do something a little bit newsy? You know, it would take one question, let him answer it however he's going to answer it. You know, balls in the Broncos court, blah, blah, blah. But regardless, they did not go that route.
No, and it's funny, the whole Peyton Manning should take a pay cut thing. You're talking about a Broncos team that even with that contract to Peyton Manning has like $26 million to spend in free agency. Look, they have money. They don't need Peyton Manning to free up money for him. I think I saw somewhere that they have projected $50 million right now in next offseason in cap space. They have a lot of flexibility with what they want to do with guys like Demaryius Thomas and Julius Thomas to try to keep those pieces together. I think the issue for Denver is how can we spend money to close the gap on New England? Because New England went out last offseason and said, we're going to bring in Revis. We're going to bring in Brandon Browner. We're going to get better in the areas that we felt like we were weak, and we'll see where this gets our football team going forward. And they got better, and it helped them. Brandon Browner switching over to Chris Matthews in the Super Bowl might have won the New England Patriots the Super Bowl when everything is said and done. So what steps do the Broncos need to take to catch back up with the New England Patriots?
Yeah, that $50 million next year I'm sure includes Manning's $19 million figure rolling off after this year. So they will have a lot of flexibility going into the future. We've talked about that. They, in my opinion, be crazy not to want Peyton Manning back for one more year. You know, when you're in the window, and because the rest of that team, what's DeMarcus Ware going to be like a year from now? You know, we don't know. You know what I mean? I mean, can you keep all these pieces together? I know you're going to have some cap space, but there's a reason you're going to have cap space, because that means a lot of your guys are rolling off the books and becoming free agents.
Oh,
and how are you going to replace those guys? 641-1010, let's get a call in before we break here. Dean, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'd just like to talk to you about the London game. I understand all the financial implications and increasing the brand of the team over in Europe and all this and that, but I guess my question is the selection of the opponent, though. I mean, we've had San Francisco and Dallas. We've lost those home games. This year it's Buffalo. I got a feeling in 2016 it's going to be Green Bay, because the Jags play the NFC North that year. So do you have any insight what determines the selection of the opponent for the London game? Because it's like, you know, the Packers, where it was the Milwaukee portion of the schedule, now it's the green and gold. I mean, the Jags seem to be losing a marquee game every year to London, which I understand from a marketing standpoint. I mean, you want to have a great opponent, but it kind of hurts the hometown folks here in Jacksonville.
I think that's a great point. I really do, and I think that is a question worthy of being asked tomorrow of Shad Khan. And I'm guessing, Tony, that the answer is we don't have really much say over the schedule. You can make requests, right? Like, for instance, if you don't want to play the day after the Florida-Georgia game,
right?
A home game, you can make certain requests. Hey, can you accommodate these things? They do their best to accommodate those things, but there's no guarantee. In terms of saying, hey, NFL, don't send a marquee team over with us next year. In this case, the Buffalo Bills are no marquee team. They're more marquee because of the presence of Rex Ryan's personality this year, but only from that standpoint. They're a solid team, but they're not any team that's kind of driving ratings around the globe.
And this year it didn't affect you as much because you still had home games against Pittsburgh and the New York Giants.
Still,
I mean, it was a really good home slate, and I get it from the fan perspective.
Dallas comes once every 8 years.
Right. You don't want to lose that game against Dallas. And you're talking about in 2016, if that Green Bay is the team that they go play over there, you get to play Green Bay here once every 8 years. So for fans in Jacksonville, this next year would be probably your only opportunity to go see a guy like Aaron Rodgers play football live. You know, and I get it from a Jaguars fan perspective how frustrating that would be. This year losing Buffalo, whatever. You know,
I agree.
The home schedule wasn't great this year. You're talking about Miami and Atlanta and Carolina and San Diego.
But if they think that the NFL, whatever their end game is, and we've heard, you know, well, we think it could be viable to have a franchise. Let's see how it goes. Maybe we'll expand. We've heard maybe they'll do 8 games there with 8 different teams hosting, you know, a home game there and rotate them. But there are all these different scenarios. Whatever your end game is, ultimately, London, if they're going to support NFL football, is going to have to support bad matchups, too.
They will.
You can't just cherry pick, hey, every week it's going to be the star-studded so-and-so's coming in. And I think we'll get a little bit better feel next year. Three more London games again next year. And the Jags, who have struggled to win and have not performed well in those London games, playing a Buffalo Bills team that won't have nearly the clout fan-wise that we saw from the Dallas Cowboy fans. I mean, you went to what was the Jags fan rally on Saturday, and Dallas fans, and there are a bunch of Jag fans that turned out for it. Dallas fans outnumbered them significantly at that. I don't think you'll have that when the Buffalo Bills come to town.
No, probably not. And maybe the NFL is trying to figure out exactly what they need to do to keep the fans in the stadium over there. I don't know. You know, but the idea of, you know, the Jags play Oakland at home next year. Why not Oakland in 2016
right.
be the game that goes over just to see if it works?
The big Del Rio grudge match.
From here, from home, as an NFL fan, I don't even realize the game's going to be in London. I know when the Jaguars are playing in London because I cover the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Right. The other ones, though.
Right. It's just another game on a Sunday.
Right.
It doesn't affect me at all. Maybe it affects the fans over there that are trying to consume the NFL, so that's why they keep sending the bigger-name teams over there to play some of the teams that are willing to give up a home game to go play a game in London. Maybe that's why they're doing it that way, but at some point, don't you at least want to try if you're the NFL? Well, let's see if they still show up if it is Jacksonville and Minnesota or Jacksonville and Oakland to see if those fans over there are really that hungry for football or if it does matter who the two teams are that we're putting in that matchup.
See, tomorrow, it's my understanding, this is how it's going to go. You're going to have press conference, you're going to have Shad Khan, you're going to have Mark Lamping, they're going to discuss the franchise, the business aspect, all this stuff. You're going to have someone from their new partnership with U.S. Assure in there. The insurance group that is going to have the naming rights to the club seat area. And then afterwards, typically what they do is they break up into opportunities for the broadcast media and the print media to separately, you know, talk with Mark Lamping while one's talking to Shad Khan and vice versa. And that is kind of stuff that's not done going inside the business here. It won't be done at a podium. It won't be streamable live on our broadcast. So in terms of asking a specific question that will make it onto the press conference portion of it, not necessarily going to have an opportunity for us to personally do it. My plan is once we get it rolling at 11 o'clock is to head up to the press conference, check in there. Tony will listen to it from this end and we'll air as much of that as we possibly can. And then anything we possibly missed, come back at the end of the show and just kind of wrap up, what we hear. Again, that's going off tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. You'll hear that on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We'll take a timeout. We'll get back to some of the franchise tag candidates out there. Good question, Dean, and we'll see if that gets addressed tomorrow. But like I said, I think the feeling is, well, that's kind of in the hands of the league, not so much a team thing, but we'll see if it gets addressed nonetheless. Also, we will see how well we all do predicting who Rolling Stone ranked as the top 10 SNL cast members of all time. They did a ranking of 1 through 141 just a few days ago in anticipation of the 40th anniversary special that aired last night. I liked it. Prosser hated it. Judge for yourself. Where do you find it, Tony? Is it at NBC.com or Hulu?
NBC.com has it. I'm not sure if On Demand at my house is going to have it too, but I know it's on NBC.com.
All right, so there is an opportunity to go back and watch it if you missed it last night. I'm going to go back and watch the last half hour of it because I was in and out with that. By the way, Walking Dead, it's like, all right, let's just get this one over with. It's a little slow. A little slow last night. They're not all the, you know, edge-of-your-seat thrill rides. I get that, but a little bit slow last night.
They're a developing story. They got six episodes left or whatever.
Yeah, I was. I'll anticipate Better Call Saul tonight, hopefully picking up my TV interest as far as that goes. All right, we'll come back, take a look at those two things, and take your calls if you'd like at 641-1010. Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you, 1010XL, 92.5 FM, Jaguars Today, rolling along. Upcoming, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of automobile dealerships, asking Jaguar fans what drives you. tomorrow's State of the Jags press conference. What are you looking most forward to hearing about or hearing specifically? A lot of people interested in the shipyard development, shipyards development, as the case may be. And, again, we'll carry that for you live tomorrow. We'll get to some of your responses to that coming up, plus our best guesses to assemble our own top 10 who we think Rolling Stone would rank, not our own personal top 10 list of SNL cast members over the years, but who would Rolling Stone rank as the top 10. We'll take the three strikes policy and we'll play a little pop quiz, although it's not so much a pop quiz when we know ahead of time what's coming. But we've all made our list. And I've made a list of 13. You've made a list of 13. I know Tyler's working on his. I don't know if he's got it done yet, but that gives you the opportunity to, get your three strikes and get your top 10 in. Really, I guess you'd only need.
I feel really good about eight.
I feel really good about probably about the same amount. I mean, I feel like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, probably eight are almost locks, but then I got two others that I think are very close to being locks, and then there's one more that I think I could see being in there. Very underrepresented with women and minorities, right? I mean, that's my list anyway. I don't know about your list. I think Rolling Stone will name.
Let's see. I have one, two, I have three ladies.
I have three ladies 13. Too, and I honestly think.
Actually, four. I got four. Out of my 13.
I'm considering a fourth, but and they may put more than one in there, but I think it's going to be a little politically correct. I think one is a no-brainer, but beyond that, I wouldn't be surprised if there's only one in the top 10, according to Rolling Stone. We'll get to that coming up. We will, won't we? Won't that be fascinating? All right, Tony, other franchise tag candidates.
Yeah.
Let's run through it quickly here, see who you think the Jags may be interested in. Obviously, Randall Cobb, if he doesn't get tagged
Heck
by the Green Bay Packers, right? What's your best guess right now? Tag him or not tag him?
My guess would be no tag.
Me too. I had somebody on my Sirius show this weekend who thought, oh, no brainer, they're going to tag Randall Cobb. They're not going to, because they don't have an immediate replacement for him. I don't know. I don't know if I feel that way. I also had a guy on, by the way, as a complete aside here, from Cleveland. We're talking to Mark Bishop, who does ESPN Radio up in Cleveland. He thinks that Josh Gordon's never playing again in the National Football League. And obviously he's close to the situation, but so maybe he, you know, as a supporter of all things Cleveland, feels a little stung by it. Also thinks Manziel's done. Manziel's not that they're going to cut him, but he's never going to amount to anything as a starting quarterback in the National Football League. So he's already moved on from him. But I'm with you. Obviously, they'll be interested in Randall Cobb. I hope they're interested in Brian Bulaga of the Green Bay Packers. I don't think he's going to get tagged because he plays primarily right tackle for them, although he's got the ability to play both sides, which you love the versatility. He's got a nasty streak, which I think this offensive line could use. And you're not going to pay him top five left tackle money if you're the Packers. He's got a bit of an injury history.
No.
Well, he's only 26.
I don't think the number's prohibitive for Green Bay if they decide to go the franchise mark. You're a team. Let's see. Green Bay has an estimated around $24 million in cap space this year. The wide receiver number is 12. So you can do it.
Sure.
You know, if you want to with Randall Cobb. My thing with Green Bay is this feels like a team that doesn't feel the need to overpay for guys like Randall Cobb. They negotiated with Jordy Nelson and got that contract done at a time when Jordy was the three, you know, and they had a little bit of leverage in that situation. It feels like Randall Cobb has all the leverage right now in any negotiation with the Green Bay Packers. Are they going to do that, or are they going to rely on their ability to draft young guys, bring in a guy like Davante Adams, Aberderis, guys that we've talked about before, and let a guy like Cobb walk, despite the fact that, yeah, he's probably your best option in the slot, but Green Bay feels like they may have the best quarterback in the National Football
Right.
League, and you don't need the best slot option necessarily to tag along with that, but you have the money if that's the direction you want to go.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to do that, but he also has a big impact on your return game
as
well. And his leverage, I think, increases somewhat by every franchise tag that's applied to other wide receivers, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas. If Jeremy Maclin gets franchised, if Torrey Smith were to re-sign with the Ravens, because I don't think he'll get franchised, all of a sudden Randall Cobb's the clear-cut number one guy on the market and a candidate to be wildly overpaid.
And there's a real potential for that to happen.
I mean, absolutely.
Demaryius Thomas, Dez Bryant, they're not going to get out of their respective places. And Torrey Smith sounds like a guy who wants to stay in Baltimore, legitimately wants to stay in Baltimore right now, which would leave Cobb as the guy in free agency a wide receiver.
All right, let's rip through some of these. Kareem Jackson of Houston, they don't expect him to get franchised, but they're saying he'd be the most likely candidate. Are the Jags going to be in the market for a veteran cornerback, in your opinion? I think they might like to bring Alan Ball back.
I think they might like to bring Ball back. I wouldn't be surprised if they sign a veteran corner this offseason. I'm not sure what kind of priority they would put on it, though.
Right, because you're...
Again, you're talking about second wave, third wave
right.
free
you're
agency.
You're thinking McCray, Colvin, Grotz. If you bring back Ball, you're feeling pretty good about that group, I think. Colts don't have anybody who's an obvious candidate. The Jags themselves don't have anybody who's an obvious candidate. Kansas City, Justin Houston, not getting out of KC,
nope.
But who wouldn't be interested in him? Miami, they're talking about Charles Clay. Like I said, he's been a solid performer for the Dolphins, but $7 million for another year is a lot to pay for 58 catches, 605 yards, and 3 touchdowns. You think about that. $7 million. If that's all the number is, I mean, that's not, they're paying Mercedes Lewis more than that right now. I think they will gladly pay one of these tight ends, whether it's Clay or somebody else. But you look at it, I mean, I get that Peyton Manning helps make Julius Thomas, but he's so much more prolific than a guy like Charles Clay. Charles Clay is an interesting athlete. You know, he can run. Everyone talks about his speed, but Jordan Cameron's been a lot more explosive in terms of yards per catch and stuff like that. So, Vikings, nobody worthy of the tag. Devin McCourty in New England, certainly. Might be the top guy on their list because, again, I don't think Raheem Moore is a guy I want to overpay. If you want a safety and McCourty's off the board, maybe it's Antrell Roll, maybe it's somebody else, a little less high profile.
Sure.
But
and look, we'll be talking to guys about the draft leading up to it here, especially with the combine coming up here this week and leading up until late April, but the early conversations we've had, no, it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of starting free safeties in this draft right now for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So if they're going to address the position, it feels like right now, if you're really going to seriously upgrade it, it's in free agency with a guy like McCourty potentially, but I don't think he finds himself in free agency at all.
Are you going to the Saints are not going to franchise tag Mark Ingram, but I understand what you're saying if you want to throw $5 million at DeMarco Murray, okay? 1,800-yard rusher, and again, despite the workload, I think he's one of the most talented backs in the league. Mark Ingram had a good but not great year this year, certainly his best year in the National Football League. He's had injury problems. I don't see the Jags throwing much money at Mark Ingram.
I don't either. And look, the thing with Murray that would have me nervous is 392 carries.
Right.
That's a lot. That 360, 370 number, usually running backs start hitting that valley once you get a year where you're getting that kind of number of touches.
How many of those guys, though, had the luxury of what... I mean, DeMarco Murray didn't get hit until he was 7 yards deep past the line of scrimmage on some of his runs.
No, we'll see. I mean, I keep waiting on Marshawn Lynch to break down, too, with the way he runs,
right.
And he doesn't either. Some guys are just built where that's not going to happen to him. No, I don't see the Jags throwing money at him.
All right, Jason Pierre-Paul would love to see that, I think, with the Giants. David Harris with the Jets.
He's going to Buffalo. What are you talking about?
That's what everybody suspects, because Rex is there. But I don't, you know, whether they have interest in him or not, I don't know if he's... You know, is he much of a significant upgrade over Puzluzzi? He'd be an inside guy. He wouldn't be an outside guy for you. So, Oakland's got no candidates. Macklin, I don't know how they feel about him, but they're going to be interested in, you would hope, the cream of the crop receivers that are out there. Jason World of the Steelers.
Not really for me.
Okay. Brandon Flowers, San Diego, again, you get into the corners. I don't think it's going to be a high priority position. Crabtree in San Francisco is an interesting one because, you know, depending on how you feel about him and his makeup, if you meet with the guy, if he's interested in playing here, if you're interested in him, could end up being one of the top one or two wide receivers available in free agency when it's all said and done. So, you got to keep an eye on him. A lot of people think Byron Maxwell is a possibility for the Jags if they do go the cornerback route.
Sure.
Malcolm Smith is another one, right? Another young-ish linebacker, Super Bowl MVP last year, that maybe you get for a less than premium price to come in and add some speed to the defense. The Rams with Kenny Britt, not going to franchise him, but he'd be the most likely guy. The Bucks don't have a franchise tag candidate. We talked about the guys on Tennessee, Michael Roos, you know, and what, Ower as well, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look, both dealing with injuries and ineffective play, basically, at this stage, I think more name recognition than anything else.
Outside of Delanie Walker, is there anybody on Tennessee that you would be like, yeah, let's go get that guy if they were a free agent?
Avery Williamson, the linebacker, who's a rookie this year.
Maybe.
Pretty nice rookie season. There'd be probably a few you'd want to have on your team. But
I think Jacksonville,
not too many,
trying to develop a roster the way that they are, Tennessee may be one of the couple of rosters that are significantly behind Jacksonville in talent on their roster right now.
What about Brian Arakpo, Washington?
He's got the injury problems.
It comes down to what he's going to want,
yeah,
and what he's going to get offered.
He's an interesting guy. I mean, if you're going to talk about going after guys like Jerry Hughes and Pernell McPhee, you would think those would be cheaper options if those are the guys you're going to be looking at than Brian Arakpo. But certainly for the right price, sure. I mean, he's a guy who's been able to get after the passer.
All right, let's get Jim in quick before we break. Jim, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Reminder to Tony, if you have time with Lamping or Shad after the conference tomorrow, don't forget to push the Sharknado watch party on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
At Sharknado 3.
We knew somebody would think that would be the
top. Do these guys with NFL Network or NFL.com or whatever, do they have to write an article about teams? Are they required? And the reason I say that, I was reading the West Wing article regarding the Jags, and it was about they need to get a cornerback to play opposite of Dwayne Grotz. And I'm like, did you watch anything? Because we're all talking about Grotz may be the nickel corner because he was playing so poorly
right
during the whole year. I'm just sitting there going, does this guy even watch any of the games? Because everybody else had, I just don't see them worrying about finding the guy to play opposite Grotz, more like opposite McCray, maybe.
No, I got you. I think your point is good that you can't just go, hey, NFL.com wrote an article. You got to look at individually who's writing that. And Chris Wessling's written some stuff over the years that's been okay, been interesting. But, I talk about this all the time. Chris Wessling was a guy that used to post, he used to have a blog, a fantasy football blog, right? That he was just into it. It's just something he did, not for money, but it was so in depth. And he ended up getting hired by RotoWorld, to talk about dynasty leagues where you keep the players year after year, because that's what he focused on. And so he started writing for RotoWorld. Well, Greg Rosenthal, who wrote for RotoWorld for a number of years, made the move to NFL.com, and Wessling kind of followed in his footsteps over there. So here was a guy who was just like a self-styled blogger. I don't know if he's got any actual writing chops or background as far as that goes,
right,
but next thing you know, he turns up as a, quote, voice of NFL.com.
No,
and basically a voice of the league.
No, and we get it. There's a lot of places nationally around this country that aren't paying attention to the day-to-day in Jacksonville the way that they should be if they're going to be covering the NFL. And so you get a lot of nonsense. I mean, I know last week on FoxSports.com, somebody was doing a review of the Jaguars secondary, and in their little blurb about Dwayne Grotz, they mentioned the public embarrassment that the team felt because of his incident down there with the bubble gum. And I was like, until I was reading that, I forgot it happened.
Right.
That's how much of an embarrassment it was. I didn't even remember the incident occurred. And I was more like, does Bubblegum Grot stick? Because it's such a fantastic nickname for a guy in that locker room. A lot of times, nationally, they're not paying attention to the stories the way that they should here in Jacksonville. So take some out with a grain of salt. And some guys do a really good job.
Some do. Some do. By the way, Delanie Walker, mentioned him a minute ago. You see his girlfriend accused him of cheating, like had his password to Instagram and outed him on his own Instagram for cheating on her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this happened this weekend. Happy Valentine's Day, Delanie, who I thought was one of the more interesting interviews that
he did
at the Super Bowl. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back. Fan feedback spotlight and our best guess at Rolling Stone's top 10 SNL cast members of all time. That's coming up on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, let's take a look at the Fan Feedback Spotlight today. Tony, brought to you every day by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, which includes Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, Tom Bush Mini, Tom Bush Volkswagen. You can log on to TomBush.com for more info the next time you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle. Today, we asked you, what are you most looking forward to hearing about during tomorrow's State of the Jaguars press conference? And the responses look like what?
Here's what we got from Stevie Howland at Irish Jaguar. Maybe an update on the International Series being extended. I'm sure a lot of the UK fans out there are very curious about that kind of thing. It's kind of the polar opposite of what's going on in Jacksonville. Why do they keep taking away a home game? And all the Jags fans over in England are like, how many years can we get this?
How many more home games can we get?
That's right.
Although, Sean commented patently clear that he wants to extend that. I don't know if they're going to have any information about that tomorrow, but if that's available to them, you can expect one home game to be going away for the foreseeable future.
Yep. From Eric, the Shipyards, looking forward to seeing the plans for that. Hope it's what they're promising. And from Larry the Butcher, he also added the Shipyard.
Yeah, we got several on the Shipyards. I would tell you what I got on Facebook, but the computer is acting up on me right now, Tony, so I will skip right past that, and we will go to the good stuff. Saturday Night Live, top 10 cast members of all time.
Mm-hmm.
A few surprises to me already. I had to look now so I can judge your guesses here, and I'll let you go first. Let's see what Tyler can fill in some of the blanks on ones you may miss. How many do you feel like dead on you're going to nail? Absolutely. Without question.
With my 13, I feel like I got at least 8 of them.
You feel like you got 8, but like,
yeah.
How many do you think you could go without missing one? I mean, feel concrete you're not going to miss anybody. How deep can you go?
6.
Maybe 6?
6 or 7.
All right, start off with your 6 or 7 strongest ones.
Here's what we got. Bill Murray.
Bill Murray is ranked number 6 all time, 1977 and 1980. He was on the cast.
Myers.
According to Rolling Stone. Mike Myers, I wasn't sure if he would make the top 10.
I forgot him.
Mike Myers is one of the best ever.
He made it at number 4. Came in at number 4.
I mean, the characters he created, it's ridiculous. And they went on to be in movies. The stuff he was doing on SNL, one of the best
ever. By the way, they said 11 movies have been made about actual skits that appeared. Obviously, he's probably had some of the more successful.
Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase, number 10.
Dan Aykroyd.
And to me, I think the early cast gets a little too much love.
They probably do.
To be honest with you.
But they're going to get that love, baby.
Right, they do. And Aykroyd came in at number 5.
Belushi.
Belushi's number 1.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that?
I'm not surprised that they rank him number 1. You die, and, you know, like he can't. He is what he is now. He's an icon, a hard partying embodiment of all the wild and crazy stuff that went on back in the day. So yeah, Belushi's number 1.
Eddie Murphy's
number 2. He was the only contender to knock Belushi off the top of the list.
Let's see. Gilda Radner.
Gilda Radner. It was to me, the lock female in the top 10.
Is that my 6?
Gilda Radner. She's number 9.
Is that my 6?
I think there.
Okay. And so now we're getting into more kind of guessing territory. I will go next with Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman. See, I thought he was a lock, and he is in the top 10. He's number 7 all time.
Let's see. Looking at my list here.
Frozen caveman lawyer.
I think there's at least one more girl in there, so I'll go Tina Fey.
Tina Fey is number 3.
Really?
I had her in my top 10 as well. Like, my guess, number 3, Tony, for Tina Fey. Holy smokes. I would have thought Gilda Radner would have been the highest ranked woman on the show because she has that icon status.
Radner, you said, was 8?
Eight or nine, something like that. Okay. So Tina Fey was in there in the top 10. You're not missing many.
I think I got 2 left. I think I got 8 of them here. There's 2.
You have a top 6. You're missing number 8. You're only missing number 8. I think you got 9 out of the 10.
All right. So who's my last one here?
You got Mike Myers. You got Tina Fey. You got Eddie Murphy. You got John Belushi. Yeah, last one. And this was surprising to me.
It was surprising.
It was to me, yeah. It's put it this way. It's not Will Ferrell, and it's not Chris Farley, who I thought both could easily be in the top 10.
They were online.
If it's a surprising one, then I'll go with, let's see what I have left on my list here, Amy Poehler.
It is Amy Poehler. Look at you. I would have thought they would have put Jane Curtin or Lorraine Newman in there because they love that old cast so much.
Poehler and Faye were fantastic.
They were. Boy, Amy Poehler, top 10. Better than Will Ferrell.
So Dana Carvey's not in the top 10?
Dana Carvey's 11.
He's the best impersonator they've ever had on the show.
Daryl Hammond's pretty damn good.
Hammond's good, but he's not Perot.
And by the
Perot
way,
is
Jay Farrow
amazing.
Is unbelievable.
Oh, Farrow's got some good stuff.
He is unbelievable.
Every time he does Kanye, I lose
Will
my mind.
Will Ferrell's 12.
Where's Bill Hader?
Bill Hader's 13.
I love
him. He was 10 for me.
And Kristen Wiig was
Kristen
my
Wiig's
other girl.
Kristen Wiig's 14. Yeah. But ahead of Farley? I mean, when you think of what are the skits Kristen Wiig does, right? You do that Chippendale skit with Chris Farley, or you do In a Van Down by the River with Chris Farley.
Yeah.
No,
I'm with you.
Kidding me?
I think everyone I had on my 13 was top 15.
Rachel Dratch is 16. She is.
Is she the girl who did the, like, the Whirlpool skit?
She
with
does.
Will
Debbie
Ferrell?
Downer.
Yeah, bah, yeah, yeah. Bah,
bah.
Yeah.
But she, yeah, she did the Whirlpool skit, which,
Lovers.
Lover, she was, I'm glad to see, I'm surprised, I thought Sandler had a chance to get in, but it's more probably what he's done post-SNL, yeah. Although he had some memorable.
I had enough of that 90s cast on my list.
Maya Rudolph came in at 18, Lovitz at 19, Al Franken at 20, I'll just give you the top 25, Chris Rock at 21, mm-hmm. Andy Samberg at 22.
Love Andy.
Fred Armisen, who really is funny, but they say he's the biggest jackass of a guy,
but he's so multiple and what he like, he can be in anyone's sketch doing anything.
Yeah, Lorraine Newman 24 and Jason Sudeikis came in at 25. Jan Hooks, by the way, I thought Jan Hooks was the wild card in it because of her thing with Hartman. They were so perfectly paired.
Yeah,
as the male female.
And I really like Keenan on there right now. And you mentioned
he's good.
You
Spade came in at 27.
Sudeikis, you mentioned they haven't done the what up with that. Since Sudeikis left the
they
cast.
They did it last night.
I missed that sketch.
Oh, it was funny. It
so
was very
much.
Funny.
And Sudeikis had to stay. They did a whole Blues Brothers, like, they did a music thing, right? And they're doing What Up With That. And Sudeikis is, you know, his little tracksuit dancer in the
I
background.
I love that.
And then they're bringing out all the other, you know, iconic musical acts. Steve Martin's doing King Tut and all this other stuff. And so they end with Aykroyd and Jim Belushi doing the Blues Brothers. And they're all on stage. And all I could think of was this was going on for 3 or 4 minutes, and the entire time Sudeikis is staying in character doing the tracksuit dance. The whole time, it's his only move that he's got.
Yeah, they haven't done the sketch since he left the show, and I've missed it. So, I mean, Samuel L. Jackson on there dropping curses, and Keenan being like, well there, Sam, we got to pay for that. It's so fantastic.
By the way, I know they're only on for 1 year. I thought Martin Short's a top 10 guy, and I thought Billy Crystal's a top 10 guy. If I'm putting together
great.
My own list, those guys, you think of the characters that you still remember from their one season.
Sure.
Nathan Thurm was so funny as the sketchy, why is it always me? Maybe it's you. You ever think it could be you? And of course, Ed Grimley, and I guess he started that on SCTV.
Yeah.
You can check. You just Google Rolling Stone Saturday Night Live all time cast ranking and go to town on it.
Honestly, Dana Carvey's the one that surprises me. That
outside
he wasn't
the top 10,
yeah.
See, to me,
and you
I,
said he was what 11?
He was 11, and I get it. He was on. I was surprised Amy Poehler made the top 10. I'm a little surprised Tina Fey made the top 10 because really Tina Fey's primary stuff was the news more so than anything else.
She did a lot of Weekend Update. And
I don't remember
she was
too
one
many
of
the skits she was in.
She was one of the writers on the show, though. She
right,
wrote
but this
bunch.
Is cast members.
I know.
I mean, Conan O'Brien was a writer. He doesn't get, you know,
no
on the list for that.
No, so there were three girls in the top 10?
Yes, Gilda. And by the way, A.D. Bryant right now is freaking hilarious. A.D. Bryant is so good, I think, in everything she does. But anyway, State of the Jaguars press conference tomorrow down here at Everbank. We'll carry that live as much as we can coming up for you tomorrow at 11 o'clock a.m. So until then, stick around. XL Primetime coming up. Happy President's Day, everybody. For Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. That does it for Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.